this technical screen trouble, and then we'll start. Okay, good morning everyone. Welcome back to the EIX session. And I hope you had a good evening last night. And are bright and happy to be here this morning. We will be starting with the co-chair election this morning. After that we have two updates again, and then a presentation by Zinek about faster recovery in internet exchanges. Then we'll go to the secure information exchange by ISC. We have a EuroIX internet exchanges best common practices presentation by Wolfgang Hennig-Bickler. And last but not least, we'll talk about route servers. So we'll start off with the elections. Roland Perry here, who's done this before, is helping me out with the elections. We're using the single transferable vote system, and he knows exactly how that all works. He has done that before. We have three candidates. No new candidates stood before 5 o'clock last yesterday. And so that means that we have Andy Davidson from LONAP, Wolfgang Tremmel from DKIX, and Remco van Mook from Equinix, who are standing as co-chairs nominees. And it's up to you to select your preferred candidates and perhaps second and third candidates if you want. You can vote for either one person or you can vote for all three in order of preference. And the system works this way, that the one with the most preference throughout the people that are here, plus the ones that voted by email. We have about 30 emails to include. And when Roland is done with counting all the votes, he'll let me know, and I'll announce the winner. Roland is now distributing the voting sheets. In fact, everybody who's in the room can vote, so you're welcome to vote, everyone. Please help him distribute the voting sheets and cast your vote. While that is commencing, I would like to go to the second point of the agenda today, which is the B6 update. Yep. So it's very quiet this morning. I wonder how that is, why that is. Okay.
Cora?
Yes?
Cora, there is not enough voting sheets.
Right. Well, there's two ways to that. It's basically a simple 1, 2, 3. So if you have a sheet of paper, like a general white sheet of paper, or someone can run and make copies. But maybe someone could run and get a number of white sheets. Still a few, okay. So I suggest that someone, and I need a volunteer here, runs to the printer upstairs in the terminal room and gets a couple of white sheets. Wolfgang, thanks a lot. Okay, well, both of you, Job, thanks. All right. B6 update. Tell me, is it B6 or B-cakes?
It depends on you. Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome. I would like to give the B-cakes update, or maybe the first introduction about B-cakes at a RIPE meeting. My name is Torleif. I work for B-cakes since last year. Okay, first, B-cakes was founded as an association in 2002. B-cakes runs the Berlin Internet Exchange, and we have currently three switch locations in Berlin. As other exchanges, we offer peering ports and the usual port speeds, and currently we have about 3 gig of traffic. We are URIX member as well, and our executive board consists of 5 people. This is Peter Lampe, Torleif Wieck, Steffen David, Helga Krüger, and Cordula Fiedler. This is mixed to, we have 2 technical people, and we have Cordula for finance and Helga for the communication. Okay, we have about 43 members as today. Members are quite different, like small companies from Berlin, small ISPs, but we have big carriers as well, as you can see. And we had a growth curve, like about 9 new members over the last 12 months, a little bit loss for carriers leaving Berlin. And today we have 40 active peering ports. As you can see here, 10 gig ports, we have 3 of them now. It's coming very late, and this was because we have B-cakes was a free exchange until last August. That means you only have to pay the association fee, and peering ports were free, so we had not that money to pay new switches and 10 gig ports, and we introduced port fees last August, and now we installed new switches with 10 gig ports. In detail, these 3 locations we have in Berlin are in Versatel, which is mainly a DSL provider, but they also have some co-location facilities where B-cakes was founded. At that time, the co-location was owned by Completel. The second location is EPB Carrier Colo, and the latest new one is the eShelter data center in Berlin, which is quite big, with 18,000 square meters space. You have the possibility to have high power racks there, and we are proud of this. Technology. We have foundry switches. We have foundry Big Iron 4000, 8000, and a new RX8 switch. And we are on the way to replace the old Big Iron 4000, 8000 with RX8 or maybe something else. Between the locations, we have dark fiber, so we can just scale the bandwidth. And we introduced OpenBGPD route service in January. Okay, here a map of Berlin. So you can see near Potsdamer Platz, the co-location owned by EPB. We have eShelter on the left near Berlin Spandau, and Versatel Gradestraße 40, sorry, which is near to the level 3 gateway, which is next door to this location. Okay. Route server, OpenBGPD. I think we'll speak about this later in this session. We run this without problems since January, and we have a couple of peers on it, as you can see. We have communities, but no filtering active on that route server. Okay, we look for more peers, of course, as other exchanges also, and especially for CDN and content providers, because we have a lot of access networks on the exchange and need more content to get more traffic. Okay, if you want to join us, we have port fees, of course. This is €300 for gig port and €1,200 for a 10 gig port, and the yearly association membership fee is €600. Okay, thanks. That's all. Any questions?
No questions? Then thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And next up is Maurice, if he's here. He was going to talk about the Paris developments, but he's not. He is. There he is. Yeah. Some Paris developments first, and then we'll go to you. I forgot about that. I switched around the agenda from yesterday. Maybe you could switch around and do the other presentation first. Yeah? Okay. So in that case, Zwijnen, you're up after all. Lots of technical stuff today. Sorry, guys. There you go.
Good morning. So my name is Zbyněk Pospíchal and I am from Dial Telecom Czech Republic. And I have an idea about a new function of the equipment of in Internet exchanges. Still nobody told me it's a completely wrong idea, so I would like to present it here. As we are a user of about 10 internet exchange points in the Europe, we have discovered one of the weaknesses of the shared medium in the internet exchanges is when a link to one ISP fails, all other ISPs knows about it after 1 or 2 minutes. When the BGP session becomes timed out. So, how it's possible to solve this problem? Currently, it is possible by tuning of timers of the BGP. What is the way to hell? Or by BFD, which must be implemented by all ISPs. So it's also hard because not every router supports it, not every ISP wants to support it, etc. So my proposal how to solve this problem is to implement a function to the Ethernet switch in the Internet Exchange Point, to the edge switch in the Internet Exchange Point. When the switch monitors all BGP sessions goes through each customer access port, and when the port goes down, when the port is broken, it takes an IP address of the broken router and sends RST packet into all BGP sessions going in the other end of all BGP sessions going through the affected port. I think it could be understandable for you from the picture. This is the easy, very very easy algorithm. How is possible to implement it into the Ethernet switch, especially to ASIC or FPGA circuits in the line card of the switch. This is the algorithm of learning of BGP sessions. It's easy. The only thing is the switch monitors all traffic, detects if it's some BGP traffic, and if it is a BGP traffic, it handles it as described on the picture. The same algorithm is for the reset of sessions when the port goes down. So if the port goes down, the switch sends RST to all BGP sessions going through the affected port. It's really easy. Only the handling of TCP. Of TCP sequence numbers is necessary to handle for this solution. So what's the advantage? The time between problem detection and reaction could be rapidly decreased from minutes to tens of hundreds of milliseconds. It's seamless for users when the problem appears. Not us now when you are waiting and you see there is really an outage. There are also known problems. The first problem is somebody must implement this function into their boxes. And the second problem I know about is with the MD5 protection. It could be solved by a database of MD5 passwords in the switch, but I think it's not a good way. Maybe it could be. I don't know. But it's partly possible to solve it with using TTL security maxhops instead of MD5 password protecting. So thank you. Some questions.
Steve Kent, BBN Technologies, over here.
Yeah?
In addition to TCP MD5, there's ongoing work in the IETF for successor security mechanisms for TCP, specifically for protecting BGP sessions, and those involve automatic key changes, which would make it completely infeasible to have any list of passwords in the switch, in addition to the fact that you're looking up several layers above where the switch should look in the first place.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Stephen Becker from M6. The idea itself might be intriguing, but I don't see how it's going to work on a layer 2 network that involves multiple switches, which will have to know all those peering details, and how to do it on multiple 10 gigi line rate, because you have to look at every single packet to make sure that it's to check whether it's a BGP packet, and then you have to take action on it. And I can tell you already that current switches have a hard enough time to just switch the traffic that they have to do instead of just inspecting every single packet and then doing something with it. So I really don't see this working in any feasible way. And I'm not really sure what problem you're trying to solve. I mean, the most problems that we see is not so much the timing out of BGP sessions, but the excessive flapping of BGP sessions due to a short link flap, for example. And on those occasions, you simply don't want your BGP sessions to flap. You just want them to hold on for a short while. So it's actually, it's just going to create more churn, I think, in the routing table than is necessary.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Wolfgang Hinebichler, Vienna Internet Exchange. I think you won't get any switch vendor to implement that, actually. I think Internet Exchanges are just a small fish for the big switch providers, and every feature we want, we usually have to fight for. And I think this is a feature that's really, I think that needs a lot of time and implementing stuff. So I think you won't get the switch vendors doing that. On the other hand, I think you could also have a server doing that, a thing that connects to, I don't know, syslog, but it's some kind of a weird hack, right? Or it would get SNMP traps, and the server would send out those spoofed messages, but it needs some kind of, interference with the switch anyway, so I don't think this working.
Yes, but doing it this way could be much, much, much slower.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Rüdiger Volk, Deutsche Telekom. Bad idea. Layer violations, abusing security leaks to sneak in stuff that's layer violating. Just get BFD. And, well, okay, for those parties who do not want to support it long term, well, okay, they may have some peerings denied because other parties actually want to have it. And, well, okay, people who are not up to state of the art have some difficulty.
Okay, it's necessary to be possible to switch this function down on specified port, of course, like any other function, including CDP or I don't know.
Volodymyr Yakovenko, Google. I would actually suggest you to consider something like extension to route server functionality. When route server is part of the same exchange, so you can get from switching platform of this exchange information about link failure, and as you have a peering session, you may have some code extension on route server to like withdraw a message prior to something. Like you can basically speed up operation of route server and link it to like link flap conditions, as example. And question to you, what is specifically bad in tweaking BGP timers? Do you have any numbers to back up that it's bad, bad, bad?
I don't say it's bad, but every manipulation with timers, especially down, and especially if on the session is a very, very large amount of updates or prefixes, it's a lot of stress for the CPU of the router. And there is a lot of providers who are using software routers like Cisco 7.2 or I don't know, some Quaggas. So it could cause flapping only because the Quagga doesn't can't import the all prefixes in the time before the session becomes down. For example, I it's my experience with it. Yeah. So I think it's not a good idea to making bigger stress for peering routers.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Roland, go ahead.
Hello, this is Roland from the RIPE NCC. Excuse me. Could we just have all the ballot papers in the next couple of minutes, please, so we can count them during the session? Thank you. Yeah, raise your hand with the paper if you've got one you still want to hand in.
There's one there. One in the middle, one at the back. Okay, Maurice, you're up next. Or now, actually. So Maurice is going to talk about some developments in Paris.
Thank you. So as we just sort this out, this is actually a quick presentation on not exactly an exchange, but an idea of a proposal to investigate building an exchange switch fabric in Paris. We just I'm just going to talk to it without the assistance of slides. So I introduce myself. I'm Maurice Dean. I actually work for Google, but I'm here really in a personal title, working for a working group that on a project we've called Phoenix, and which is to look at the market situation in Paris and see if we can help address some of the shortfalls we see with the exchange environment there. Right now, let's start first of all from what we could see as maybe some of the challenges. Paris has the fortunate position of being very central to the European telecoms industry, but France has numerous submarine cables running from across the Atlantic into the Middle East, into Africa, and all the way to Eastern Australia in the case of Simui-3. With landing stations in Marseille and also in various parts of northern France. But if you look at the environment, or the exchange environment within Paris, there seems to be a surprisingly few large-scale exchanges that represent the countries that or have members from the countries that are connected via those submarine cables. Plus, also there's something of a fragmented environment where I think at the last count there were 11 internet exchanges within the metro area of Paris. That may have actually increased in number since I last count. They do tend to appear and then disappear. And in discussions with various networks, there are some sort of network operators and content networks, there's a clear view that this fragmentation and this numerous number of exchanges and the complexities of operating in Paris is actually a detriment to future growth. So we've formed a working group of sorts to take a look at this and see if there's any we can formulate some proposals of how we can help address this. And it seems that our early conclusions are that if there is a demand, that demand looks like a demand for a robust, well-supported, distributed switch fabric architecture within the Paris metro area, with some advanced features that may be not to be present in all existing exchanges. Things like the ability for advanced reporting features based on MAC addressing or MAC accounting or S-flow and the support for platforms or services that go beyond the normal, the standard exchange of IP traffic between wholesale ISPs. So, for example, platforms to support the interconnection of VoIP, maybe video conferencing and other platforms. We're starting to think around how we can address this demand. Well, first of all, we think the structure we're thinking is that we should look at consolidating a number of the existing infrastructure, a number of the existing exchanges that may be located in one or two facilities, and see if we can't build a fabric in which the participants connected to those exchanges can exchange traffic with the other participants connected to different buildings, different facilities. That we, the second conclusion that we have is that this should, this, the formulation of this idea should, or the most successful of the type of models like this have been under the auspices of a non-profit based infrastructure or organization, and we think this is probably the best way to approach, and with an emphasis from an operations viewpoint as a and designing for scale and operating a level of technical and business operations with, that are focused around performance and availability of the infrastructure. So that's a quick introduction. The what we're going to do next is release to try and get a good understanding of the of those demands in some meaningful way and backed up with some data. We've originated a survey that we're distributing, hopefully starting today, and just ask a few questions around for those ISPs, facilities, and CDNs and general network operators who are present or intend to be present in Paris. What their requirements are, what are their demands, what are the challenges they see today, and we're going to collate some data over the next 3 weeks to see if we can't make some sense of it and refine this proposal into some more detail. At that point, we'll formulate some form of feasibility study, and if the feasibility study doesn't say no, this is an absolutely ridiculous idea, drop it immediately, then we look at the next steps about forming a commercial working group, maybe and a technical working group to take a look at the proposal in a bit more detail. So that's kind of where we are right now with the Phoenix project, and I guess my bottom line request is that maybe people can go to the website, which is the address is here, and fill out the survey. So if you have an interest or in Paris, or just have very strong opinions you'd like to express to us, please leave comments, and we'd be grateful to read through them. There's also before I sort of open the floor to any questions, there's also we'd actually be very interested in having a discussion with ISPs or facilities that have an interest in Paris. If they're rather outside of the format of the survey, we'd want to approach some of the working group to just have an offline discussion. Please approach myself or Christian Kaufmann from Akamai, Raphael Maria from Neo Telecoms. We're all hanging around, probably at the bar for the next day or so. So that's it. So any questions?
Hi, Remco from Ook, from Equinix. An observation rather than a comment or a question. You might want to have a look at your survey and remove the German and perhaps put some French in instead.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Well, neither did I. Some of the words in your survey, as I see it on my browser right now, are in German. So I see other instead of others or autre, I see sonstiges. And some other. So your survey is partly in German.
Oh, well, it has taken on a level of artificial intelligence that I think is admirable, and I will be patenting the technology and will be available for licensing. Thank you. I'll take a look at that. Any other questions and indications of my next business model? If not, thank you.
Anyone? No questions? Okay. Well. We'll go and have a look at that survey, I guess, because that's interesting. All right. So we have a next presentation about the secure information exchange from ISC. I haven't been approached this morning. Keith, there you are. Is everything uploaded? There's no election result yet, and Roland is still counting. And after that, we'll have the best common practices for IXPs from URIX, Wolfgang Hennigbüchler, and we'll close off with the route server discussion.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm Keith Mitchell. A little while since I've spoken to an EIX working group. I've been living over in DNS land for the past few years. Nice to be back. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about today about a different kind of exchange we've been working on at ISC called Security Information Exchange. I'm sure you're all very familiar with the concept of exchanges as trusted neutral intermediaries, fending off the different competitors and trying to get them to work together. Internet exchanges have been around for a while now. There's other kinds of exchanges for trading and also physical interconnect, not just the layer two switching that we often do. So what's the idea of a security information exchange? Well, as I'm sure you all know, internet security is big business these days. But there are some limitations in the way that people deal with it. The idea of the security information exchange is that we can do exchange of security-sensitive data in real time and also on a centralized multilateral basis, which is something that doesn't really happen at the moment, and use that as a way of fighting back at the bad guys. This is to some extent how security information is shared in the internet at the moment. There's lots of different players. The players tend to have their own communities. There's various bilateral interactions. But there isn't necessarily much in the way of a clearinghouse for this kind of information. Here's something that as exchange operators we're a little bit more familiar with, which is sharing information between the different parties. Everybody contributes, everybody potentially consumes and analyzes the data coming in, the data shared. Obviously this is sensitive data, so it's important to have a privacy framework and it's important to have a legal framework. So here's the kind of thing that we have at the moment. We have a bunch of sensors out there on the internet. They're mostly what are called passive DNS sensors, so they're gathering DNS query data, but that's scaling up to more than just DNS stuff now. We have some relay machines, say a little bit more about them in a minute. We have a switch, which is this layer two switch fabric, but it's used a little bit different than you'd from peering. And then we have a bunch of researchers who are performing analysis and potentially summarizing the results of that analysis back onto the exchange. This is in the San Francisco Bay Area, Palo Alto Internet Exchange. We're working on expanding this to other locations. We're in the process of building another exchange on the east coast of the US, probably in DC and New York. Again, at a major data center where all the capacity and players are. And again, there'll be sensors feeding that. It will be possible to summarize data between the two different locations. We don't want to do full strength real-time feeds because it's a very large volume, but the results of some of the analyzed and filtered data is potentially shareable between the locations. And then it also makes sense to potentially gather data from other parts of the internet internationally and to use local relays to summarize that. And one of the reasons for having local relays is that you, depending on privacy legislation and other limitations, you may not want to move the data between countries. Some of the data sharing you may want to keep within a particular country or within the EU. Rather than backhauling it all across international boundaries and potentially causing issues. And it's also possible to do analysis on the data, for example, anonymization, to make sure that personally identifiable information is not being shipped around between the different nodes, which is also important. And then, if you get enough capacity in a particular location, then potentially make that a full SIE node and not just a summarizing relay. We're talking to various exchange operators at the moment. We'd certainly be interested in talking to more about setting up SIE instances at different locations close to existing peering exchanges. So getting back to the model, there's a whole bunch of different types of data out there which are used in the abuse community. I'm sure you're probably familiar with spam and DNS blacklists. Passive DNS I'll say a little bit more about. But there's all kinds of other things, log files, malware analysis, antivirus summaries, anti-phishing activities, abuse reports, honeypots, darknets, all these kind of things. We we've put together some tools within SIE. NCAP is a tool you may find interesting. It's a little bit like TCP dump, but it's specifically designed to parse DNS messages to quite a high level. There are various plugins to that which can be used for filtering data for rebroadcasting. We've generalized NCAP to something called MSG, which I'll talk about a little bit in a minute. It takes a lot of hardware. One of the decisions that we made with SIE is that we don't store data. This is all in real time. That places some interesting demands on the switching hardware. It places some interesting demands on the server hardware. It means that there's some quite important architecture decisions to be made. We've also found that hard disks just can't cut it. If we're doing all this in real time, we need lots of RAM, we need flash disks, and we've been deploying a lot of that. So NCAP is a derivative of something that was previously called DNSCAP, which is based on the PCAP libraries. It does some things which are very useful if you're looking at passive DNS data, i.e. DNS queries. It can defrag the queries, gets rid of link layer information, has a normalized format, gives you very accurate timestamps. And we've added some other features so that it copes better with unicast, broadcast, multicast. Has modules, and the deduplication is very important as well. If you add together all the passive DNS feeds that we have, which are queries from upstream of caching resolvers towards the authoritative servers, that's a very large volume of data. So these go straight onto the exchange, but there are analysis machines. You know, some researchers want to look at all the DNS messages, but other others are much more interested in more limited things. So we do deduplication of the queries. So there's researchers interested in unique DNS messages. There are various filters that we can do, for example, so that you see changes between DNS queries for people who are researching fast flux, used for controlling botnets. We're seeing 20,000 packets per second just from passive DNS traffic. That's a lot. If you deduplicate it, then you get it down to 3,000 packets a second, which is a bit easier to deal with. But then if you start running filters on that, so that you're only looking at changes, then you have the ability to do fast flux at almost human eyeball speed. So you can actually just look at this and see, try and figure out who's using fast flux DNS to run their botnet CNC. A little bit about this NMSG format. Whereas the PCAP, the DNSCAP format was basically a way of rebroadcasting DNS queries, this NMSG is for a whole bunch of different types of data structure, but still using the underlying SIE concept of a broadcast exchange. But these can not just be things like DNS queries, they could be things like spam headers. They use a generalized protocol buffer format, which I won't claim to understand, but this is something that, that Google has come up with and seems to be a very useful tool for generalized handling of data. Something you probably don't see in the X meeting very often is a fragment of code. Don't ask me what it means, but it does the necessary stuff. And the way that it works on the actual exchange fabric is we have a bunch of channels which correspond to VLANs. Most of these are actually MAC layer broadcast. So you can see this is not the kind of thing that you would want to run over your peering fabric. It needs dedicated switches. We talked about passive DNS, raw, deduplicated, fast flux, various types of channels for anti-spam blacklists, various types of DNS traffic from dynamic DNS providers, popular sites, TLDs, there's feed of AS112 queries so that you can find the people that are sourcing the RFC 1918 lookups that shouldn't be. Various IP addresses that have been used for root and other TLD servers in the past, which are no longer authoritative or used, but still see huge numbers of queries. They're interesting too. Lots more channels. We want more spam. URL rink pairs are interesting to people who run search engines. NetFlow data is interesting. Various sync calls and other things. SIE has proved an absolutely invaluable tool for the conficker cabal, the people who are fighting the latest biggest botnet. And there's been some quite interesting analysis being done of that. And there's other things, potential data from queries to darknet address space. We're just taking chunks of address space and looking at what's coming in from scans, and also various malware activities as well. But you know, one channel example is spam. Various ways that you can get the data from spam traps, from supports, from spam assassin scoring. And obviously, it's not just spam. You can use what you get out of spam analysis to look at other bad activity that, that the spam is trying to entrap people into, malware, phishing, botnets. More code fragments about how you would represent a email message using an MSG format. Mentioned malware analysis, so people can submit malware, provide links to it. There are various tools that can be performed on the exchange. This is all in real time, analyzing that, and potentially some people can share the data. Other people find this a valuable use of raw data that they can do analysis on, particularly for a researcher. And there's lots of other things, reputation analysis, DNS scans. The results of going out there and you know, trying to fingerprint all the DNS servers, find out what version they're running. Other things, maybe we can use it for DDoS reporting, potentially when a particular URL is, shows up in people's queries and a whole bunch of people are going to the same URL in a flash mob. Well, maybe it's an event, but maybe also it's a malware or phishing event pointing people to a bad URL. Maybe we can use it for BGP traffic. So, this is a collaborative effort. It's part of ISC's public benefit mission. If you can help with this, we much appreciate it. We're always looking for data. Once that data's there, there's a possibility of sharing it on a multilateral basis. If people want to bring servers, we can host them. Particularly, servers are doing interesting types of analysis. And the other thing that's very helpful, particularly from ISPs, particularly if you're running, for example, large recursive name servers, is to install sensors and get this data so that it can be backhauled into SIE and analyzed, and the results of that analysis can be used to help you detect and prevent abuse on your network. How does this work for exchange operators? Well, this is another type of value add that you can potentially put onto your exchange. This isn't just about exchanging raw data. This is about doing analysis on that data. You can, for example, work with your ISP members and help them deal with abuse, which is always a problem, and there's always potentially new tools. You can potentially do outreach to local certs and law enforcement they might not already be doing. Be more proactive about security generally. But obviously, the other thing you need to be careful about is privacy laws and policies. This isn't specifically wiretapping, but it's certainly looking at data, and it's very important to make sure that that data is anonymized and dealt with appropriately. That's about it. Our program manager for SIE, Eric Zegast, is in the Jabber room at the moment. So if there are any questions that I can't field, Eric will be very happy to field them, either online now or if you want to contact him afterwards. But happy to take any questions. No questions?
Yes, there's one question, Keith.
Hi, this is Eric Osterweil from UCLA and CSU. As a researcher, how can I get access to some of this, especially the DNS names? That'd be very interesting.
You need to sign an agreement, obviously, to make sure that the data that you're receiving and analyzing is dealt with appropriately and maintains confidentiality. And then we can provide you with collocation space for a server that you can plug into one or more of the exchanges. And then you can tune into whichever channels you're interested, the passive DNS channel, the deduped passive DNS channel, whichever. And it's up to you then what analysis you do in that.
Okay. So just provide a box after signing an agreement?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
No other questions for Keith?
Okay, thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Keith. Then we have a presentation by Wolfgang Hennebigler, It's a UIX presentation. It's about best common practices in IXPs.
Hello, everyone. My name is Wolfgang Henner Pichler. Actually, it's not Henner Pichler. Nobody ever can say that. It's so hard to be me. I'm talking about IXP BCPs, best current practices. This is a project that arises from the EuroIX community. It was originally started by, help me, Cara, it was started by the Italian guy. How was he called? Oh, I forgot his name.
Simone Arena.
He started this project, and after he left the Italian IXP, I took on with that project. It's basically a document for technical practices for internet exchanges. So it goes through setup and maintenance of an exchange point infrastructure, or it also you also get a set of recommendations for already established from already established IXPs. So what you basically get there is information how to set up an IXP or how to run an IXP. If you want to create an IXP, just do it and follow this this best current practices document. You will get an IXP that is more or less the recommendation from our community. If you already run an IXP and you want to know, you know, how do others do monitoring? How do others have like the setup for out of band management and things like that? You will find this in this document. It's not described in a whole detail, like how do you set up Nagios or whatever, but it generally tells how most of the IXPs in Europe or members of the EuroIX community do that. What it does not address is commercial or political issues, so this is something you gotta find out on your own. So EuroIX members, this is not a commercial for EuroIX, but I'm just saying it. EuroIX members get access to the sample configurations from other IXPs. So some IXPs contributed sample configurations. This will not be published in the best current practice document because the IXPs decided to not publish their internal configuration for security considerations. EuroIX members also have the possibility to contribute content to that document. This is more than welcome. They have access to more than the general IXP guidelines. There's also a website, BCP. There's an upcoming root server, BCP, or whatever. So this document will be published on the EuroIX website soon. There's still some time for EuroIX members to read through it before we publish it. There might be a possibility to add comments for non-members. Maybe it's just done by email if the request isn't too high, or there will be a comment section on the webpage. But generally, if you have a friend who wants to create an IXP, or if you just want to know how things work, this is a good document to just address that. And I think this is it. Yeah. Any questions? No questions. Good.
No questions for Wolfgang? A question.
No questions.
No, wasn't a question. Okay. Thanks, Wolfgang. Before we move to the route server discussion, we have a result of the elections.
Okay, well, I've counted the election, and the number of ballot papers was also double-checked by another member of the staff. quite close run thing. We had 110 ballot papers from the room. We had 28 email votes. I've discounted five additional email votes. That's 28 valid votes. There were five invalid email votes because they came in after 10 o'clock. In fact, some of them, the last one just came in a couple of minutes ago. So we'll discount all of those. So we've a total of 138 valid votes altogether. There were no spoiled papers. In the first round, we had 57 votes for Andy Davidson, 36 for Wolfgang Tremmel, and 45 for Remco van Mook. So we've taken the votes for Wolf, the 36 votes for Wolfgang, redistributed those, and the final result is Andy Davidson, 68 votes, and Remco, 59. So I declare that Andy Davidson is the winner of the election.
Well, congratulations, Andy. Can you come up? Thanks so much. Thanks, Roland. I'm just inviting you up here, and you can make a... Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You'll be up here next time. Well, in Lisbon, I guess. Okay, so very well. Yeah, I could have done that. They're beautiful. So to close off, we still have about 25 minutes. We're doing some discussion on route serving. I would like to close a little bit early, like 5 minutes to before the break, so everyone has a lot of, has enough time to get to the lunch. And I have to go to the working group chair lunch, so we'll all be happy and early for lunch. I would like to invite Nick, who wanted to kick off the route server discussion with a couple of slides.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. I want to explain why a lot of internet exchanges use Quagga for a root server. It's not always obvious. There are a lot of BGP stacks out there. There's kind of Cisco and Juniper and Quagga and blah, there's a bunch of other ones. The problems start arising when you have a situation where you have multiple members on your exchange, and you have, do you have a pointer? Okay, thanks. Where you have a requirement to do prefix filtering. Now, not all of the commercial BGP stacks like Cisco and everything like that will do things like stripping out your autonomous system number and, you know, that sort of thing. Quagga and OpenBGPD and BERT will do all of those. Quagga is a little bit different in one respect in that it supports multiple RIBs. And to explain why this is a good feature, I'm going to use this diagram here. So you've got here four root server clients, A, B, C, and D. And A and B are providing connectivity into the exchange for these clients over here, X and Y. So you can immediately see that this path here, AYX, is longer than BX. So you'd expect that under a normal situation, B would provide connectivity into the exchange for X. So that's what's going to happen to the root server in a single RIB root server. The it'll do its run its best path calculation, and it'll calculate that the best path is indeed BX. But of course, in real life, when you're running an internet exchange root server, you really want to provide the facility for clients of that root server to implement some filtering, outbound filtering from the root service, so that other people will not necessarily be able to see your prefixes. The usual way of doing this, and there are others, and this isn't. The problem here isn't specific to using BGP community tags, but on a lot of exchanges we use notation. We tag prefixes with 0:, whatever the AS number that you don't want to see, or you don't want to, them to receive your roots, and then the root server will filter those out. So B here has tagged all of its prefixes with 0:, because it doesn't want to pair with D for whatever reasons. There might be sort of personality conflicts or commercial interests or whatever. So what you'd really like is that D would be able to get back to here using this backup path of AYX, but of course the problem is it can't. The root server has only a single rib, and therefore it only has a single best path, and that single path is BX, and therefore D cannot see this autonomous system number over here, or this particular prefix over here, through the root server. Quagga gets around this by implementing multiple lock ribs. And very quickly, just to spin through the slides here again, you've got ABCD, our root server clients. Same situation as before, AYX is longer than BX. Now, the root server, of course, is different now. You've got multiple ribs inside it, and in order to implement internal filtering within the root server, Quagga's implemented what are called export and import root map filters. They're a little bit like in and out, except that they work internally. Okay, so all of these prefixes are going to go into all of these lock ribs here. So prefixes from A are going to go into lock rib B, C, and D, and prefixes from B are going to go into A, C, and D. All right? So rib D down here is only going to see AYX up here. It's not going to see BX, because BX has specified in its routing policy that it doesn't want the root server to transmit its prefixes to D. So rib C will select the best path to X as being BX here, and rib D will see the best path as being AYX, because BX has been filtered out of it internally. Okay, so that's why you kind of really need multiple lock ribs. Quagga, at the moment, is the only easily available BGP implementation with multiple lock ribs. There are a couple of others. They're not easily obtainable. Now, there are a couple of other problems with lock ribs. The first thing is that with a regular BGP implementation, your resources are pretty much linear. So, I mean, if you've got, like, you know, say, 1 million prefixes, that's going to be 10 times as much work as 100,000 prefixes. With multiple lock ribs, it's going to go from order P to that, well, roughly that, not quite that, but roughly that, which is order N squared, and that's really horrible. That's basically, if you do just a show IP BGP summary, you multiply the number of prefixes received from each client by the total number of clients, and that's roughly the sort of order of magnitude of calculations that you're dealing with, both for memory and for CPU. Now, this is immediately a problem for any BGP implementation, because I mean, like, memory is fine. You could just bang in like heaps of memory, and that's going to keep you going for a couple of years. But really, you need a multi-threaded BGP implementation, because if you do everything on a single core, and if you have like piles of prefixes and piles of clients, like some of the larger internet exchanges, they're going to get very, very busy indeed. It's fine if you're a small internet exchange like INEX. We have no problems whatsoever, but the other ones, it hurts. So that's just a very brief introduction to into what why an a root server at an internet exchange is a little bit different to a regular BGP stack. Any questions?
Thanks for that introduction.
Thanks very much.
So that was about a Quagga setup. Now, I've talked to a couple of people here in the room that also run route servers and that have very specific setups, very specific choices that they made. And they would like to say something about that and why do they tolerate or why did they choose for what they chose for. And Andy, can you go first? You wanted to say you... Yeah? So you're building one, yes, yeah. You're building two, actually.
I hinted at this in the update from the LUNAP IXP yesterday. We want to build root servers because the evidence we've seen when we discussed this with our colleagues at other exchanges is that it's a good way of growing value from people as soon as they connect to the exchange. It's a service that a number of people have individually asked us for, and it's a good way to grow traffic, which of course helps with marketing. So we've decided we want to build some root servers, but we didn't want to build another Quagga because there are already a bunch of them in London. So ours was a geographical concern, really. We are likely to roll out root servers based on OpenBGP and support the AMP6's ambitions to add per-peer RIB to that software, and also roll out Bird, which the guys from Prague are doing an awful lot of work to make good. I think we're going to be the first exchange to roll that in as a root server, so we're working really closely with those guys, or at least we've agreed to work really closely with those guys so that we can swap really good feedback, and if there are other exchanges in the room who are making similar decisions to us, we'd certainly swap information about how successful the new builds on this new software was going. So that explains our position and why we're not using Quagga.
Okay, thanks for that. Well, you mentioned two others, so I'm going to go to those two. If anyone has a remark or a question in between, just go up to the mic and state your question, your remark. And now, Andy mentioned AMP6 as working on a new setup for OpenBGP. Can you say something about it, Steve?
We're moving away from what we're currently using as Quagga. It's just basically too unstable. It really has scaling problems, and we do see the single CPU, single threading issue. So we're going to we're actually moving to OpenBGP D. Which isn't quite ready yet. We still don't have per-peer RIBs. We're paying developers to actually put that in, and hopefully we're going to see something. We've seen CVS commits on the OpenBGP repository, so something is happening. We're just not really sure what's happening right now, but it's in development. So. Was there a question or no?
I think actually Andre is going to talk about Bird a little bit here.
Oh, okay, sure.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm Andre Philipp from NixCZ, the Prague Exchange Point, and as was mentioned by Andy, we are sort of a group of people that developed the Bird, which is the routing daemon, quite actually old one, but not very used for, not very well known. And we are currently running two Quaggas as a root server, and we are not very happy with that situation. In any case, we would like to have two solutions, so we are working on replacing one of the Quagga by Bird. And many of you doesn't know Bird, so it's a routing daemon which is developed by people that have some close relation with Exchange Point. So exactly the thing like, for example, Nick presented, those requests will be heard and the people understand the problematics of those things. So if you need some more features into Bird, just let us know and we can implement some new things into that.
Thanks for adding that. Mike?
Okay, I'm Mike Hughes from Lynx. I think one of the things that I'd like to get across, I mean, we run right now Quagga, as I described yesterday, and I showed you some stats in terms of the number of peers and the number of routes that we, prefixes that we receive on there. So we, you know, we ran Quagga when we first put those in several years ago because really that's all there was. There wasn't really much in the way of other viable alternatives. Root servers have become very vital, I think, to a lot of the larger exchanges, because if you think of an exchange the size of AMZIX or Lynx, where you've got say 300 members, trying to maintain, if you've got an open peering policy, trying to maintain that number of peering sessions and that number of peering relationships on a, you know, configuring per device per session, it's quite a lot of work. And you've got to ask yourself, if there wasn't the root servers, would that peering community and that peering environment be so rich? And probably wouldn't, because people wouldn't. They go, well, I'm not going to go and peer with these 100 people because it's not actually worth the time to administer those sessions. Whereas if I can get them via the root server, then that's actually low cost and it's very, very easy pickings. So yeah, we're currently in the situation where we've got issues with Quagga. We've hit some of the scaling issues that Nick was just talking about. And we're basically just backing several horses in this race, because there are lots of alternatives, or there's starting to be a chance of lots of viable alternatives. Bird is one of them. OpenBGPD, once it has the per-peer, per-client RIB support, fixing Quagga, looking at commercial alternatives. So, but there wasn't that many alternatives until recently. So I think what we're seeing is that, and what we know is that the community abhors a vacuum, and when there is a vacuum, it will try and fill it. And what we've seen is that there is a vacuum with Quagga for the larger exchanges. So it looks like we are trying to fill it. Yeah, we are trying to fill that gap ourselves, one way or another. But that's just my observation of the state of the nation with root servers at the moment. We've basically done some things to buy us some time with Quagga, but that's all we can do until we find a replacement, and that's spending a lot of time and effort on that at the moment.
Thanks for that. Mike, is there any other exchange that would like to say something? Arnold, DKX? Yep. Harold, go ahead. Yeah, you're also in an implementation phase or thinking phase. What to choose and why?
Yes, this is Harald Michler from Vienna Internet Exchange. As I've mentioned yesterday in the introduction, we currently plan to implement a route server as fast as possible. But besides the decision which software we want to take, where we intend to take Bird because it's developed by IXP people, there's also some organizational questions. For example, how do we implement this filtering issue? Nick showed it in his presentation that it's common to use BGP community to give the route server the information which prefix has to be announced to which peer. But I'm afraid that this methodology is not capable with 32-bit AES numbers. And we currently want to build a new route server that is capable of all features or problems that could occur. And I don't want to call 32-bit AES numbers a problem, but if we build a new route server, it should be capable of everything that could come now. So that's our main problem. We want to build something that is able to do all our requirements at the moment.
Anyone? Arnold? Yes. There you go.
Technically wise, there's not much I can add. Almost everything was said. Currently, we at D6 are still running a fairly old version, and it's quite stable compared what I've seen at other exchanges. I guess I should also mention that last week at Eurex we talked about it, and we decided to form a virtual working group on improving Quagga, and we already see substantial improvement in and gathering resources, both in personal as well as in collecting money. And I'm quite sure that at next time and RIPE meeting in Lisbon, we already will be able to pr- provide results on this.
Okay, thanks for mentioning that, and I'll save you a slot then. Okay, I think that concludes, unless there's anyone else that wants to say something, concludes the session. Okay. Then that means that we're done for today. I would like to thank you all for being here. I would like to thank Fergus for being remote. And he will be here the next time, well, at least we'll see about that. Andy, congratulations. Wolfgang, thanks for standing. Remco, thanks for standing. Big applause for those guys as well. And see you next time. Thanks, everyone. Roland, also thanks for counting the votes. We're done.